Here in Los Angeles, we've been dealing with an educational crisis of sorts. We've had teachers out on the streets. Hopefully by the time you're hearing this podcast, this strike against the LA Unified School District by the United Teachers of Los Angeles has ended, but it may not. And so a lot of what we're going to talk about in this podcast has to do with really a couple of things. One, about our kids, and two, about the state of education in 2019. And here's what our guests have to say about it. All right, let's start by having all of you introduce yourself. Let's start with Ioana.
My name is Ioana Sclaviniti, and I am an educator. I teach preschool at Norris Dairy Elementary, and I've been teaching for 28 years.
I'm Anne-Marie Kingston. I teach third grade at Norris Dairy Elementary, and I've been teaching there for 14 years.
I'm Iva Weiner. I'm a professor of special education at Cal State Northridge. I'm also the chapter's vice president of the California Faculty Association on campus.
Julie?
I'm Julie Marsh. I'm a professor of education policy at the USC Rossier School of Education, and I'm also a faculty director of PACE, which is Policy Analysis for California Education.
Okay, so let's start there, because you do a lot of research with regard to how our schools work or don't, if they're dysfunctional or they're functional. So why don't you sort of start us off with what is the state of education in 2019?
I should start with there have been improvements. There have been a lot of great new policies passed under Governor Brown. We've seen improvements in spending and resources and in outcomes. However, we still see large gaps, achievement gaps based on race, ethnicity, income, English language status. We have still the lowest per pupil compared to the national average. We have lower national per pupil spending. We have the smallest ratios of adults to students in classrooms. We have lots of problems with staffing. Three-fourths of the districts in the state say that they have trouble filling teacher positions. There are shortages in special education, in math and science, in certain areas. So there are a lot of needs across the state right now in terms of resources, funding, and in terms of outcomes.
I'm not sure when our friends who listen to this will be listening to it, but it may well be that the Los Angeles Unified School District strike is over by the time you listen to this. It may not be. But there are actions across the country. You might be in other states, even other parts of this state. And one has to wonder how we sort of got to a state of some chaos here. It does feel that way a little bit.
Well, go ahead. Yeah. I just want to say also, I think it's a window of opportunity. This is politics, right? So a lot of these issues have existed for a long time. The window opened right now. There's momentum across the country, the Red for Ed movement. I think also there's an opportunity with a new governor, a new state superintendent, new legislators coming in. So I think that politically, when you have negotiations and you have new leaders, this is an opportunity to actually push for some changes.
That's sort of looking at the cup half full, because what you're saying is that we could take adversity and turn it into something positive.
Absolutely. And the energy that we see in the streets in LA this week, we were just saying earlier, if we could take all those people and bring them to voting and bring them up to Sacramento, I mean, there's an energy here. There's a will to make change. And I think we could channel it in really good ways.
I think I heard Austin Buettner, the superintendent of LA Unified, say something about we could build on all this energy. I think I heard him say that this week. It's true, whether he said it or not. You could build on this energy. There's a lot there.
I think obviously you can build on it. I always think that crisis is an opportunity for real change. But, you know, we also need to go back to the recession, right? So that happened in 2007-08, and we saw a tremendous decrease in funding as a result of shrinking dollars. But we need to try to get back to a place where we're fully funding schools and making it a priority. But, you know, it begs the question. We have limited resources. How do we use those resources? So this, for me, boils down to a matter of priority. And we need to make that known to Sacramento.
So given that thought, we know that one of the long-term complaints is class size. If you take kids out of a class to try to make a class smaller, you have to put them in another class. That means you have to pay for another teacher maybe even another classroom facility, but you've got to pay money. It's not a free thing to reduce a class size.
It's not a free thing, but let's just back up. You know, we know that there's one factor that does determine success, and that is class size, right?
So, absolutely.
And so we do know that. So, and I don't think Buten and others are saying have disagreed with that. I think what they're really saying is, how do we pay for all of this? I do think they're here. I'm not into demonizing people, and I think when we get to that point, and so is the UTLA president being demonized, we stop talking, we go back into our corners, and then what happens, you know? And what we really should be doing is taking that rage and anger that we have and getting on planes and buses and going to Sacramento and showing up with 60,000 red shirts and letting Sacramento know, you need to fix something here.
So what do they fix? I mean, and we'll get to the teachers in a moment, but what do they fix? I mean, do they take money out of some other budget, put it over here, not do this program because that program maybe isn't as important as this educational program? Is it a matter of moving the shells around and taking money out of here and putting it over there? Is that old thing about robbing Peter to pay Paul?
Yeah, I mean, it is about trade-offs, right? And I guess I want to disagree a minute to say that it's not necessarily class size. We know teacher quality matters, that the most important input, right? So we need to invest in our teachers. And so, yes, it is about trade-offs. We know it matters. Education matters for a lot of things in our state that we care about in terms of productivity and employment and all of those things. Another fix, which I could talk about, is Proposition 13, which is what has constrained our ability to raise money in terms of local property taxes. There will be an effort in 2020 on the ballot to try to increase property taxes on businesses, which might help us as well in terms of raising some more funding. But we are constrained by Proposition 13 in many ways.
And when you go back to the idea of teaching, look, you could have an incompetent teacher with 12 kids. You know, that obviously is going to be a problem. What we're facing in colleges of education, I don't know if Rossi is having the same problem, is that people are not wanting to go into this profession, right? And so you have an increase, a big demand, and we can't get people to sign up. And now I think that's also instructive because we've seen teachers being bashed over the years. We've been hearing a lot about this in the news, and people just, you know, and the other thing, the economy is good. So when the economy is good, people are going to find other places of employment, maybe less stressful, pay higher, etc. So, you know, we really have to step back and look at this from the 30,000 feet view. Not, you know, we can fight it on the streets, which we need to do, Sacramento, but we really need to take a step back and look at the whole picture here, because it's a nuanced picture. It's not easy.
Well, the purpose of a protest or a demonstration is to bring attention to something.
Absolutely.
And it's one of the great things in this country that we're able to do and not be berated for doing it. And so when teachers in mass, we're talking, I in the initial rally, when on day one of the strike, there were two different estimates of how many people were out on the streets. LAPD didn't want to get into the numbers game. They wouldn't put a number on it. L.A. Unified School District Police said there were 20,000 and put out a press release saying so. But then when I talked to some people from UTLA, they thought it was more like 50,000. To me, whether it's 10, 20, 30, 40, or 50, that's a hell of a lot of people. That's a hell of a lot of people. And you know, and they were all fired up. They were so fired up that all I had to do was say hello, and they started telling me everything. So, I mean, and Ioana was one of them.
Yes, I was.
And so why did you get into teaching?
I actually was in another career. I was managing a folk art gallery, and I wanted to do something in my community. So I volunteered at the local school in Venice for fun. And I found a few weeks later that the teacher came up to me and said that the kids were asking when the nice, smiley reading lady was coming back. And it made me cry.
They couldn't say your name either?
I was working with them on reading. They were in fourth grade and not reading. Uh-huh. So I was given a small group of children in an empty classroom, no teaching experience. But I realized that I had a natural gift, and it wasn't my plan. So I switched, and I went back to school, and I got my master's degree in education and my credential, and I've never looked back.
Now, you've been teaching for a while.
28 years.
But Anne-Marie, you've been teaching for how many years?
I've been teaching for 14 years.
14 years.
And I started right out of college. I went to CSUN. I had worked at day camps.
Why did you want to be a teacher?
I just enjoyed working with kids, but also I just I had such great teachers, and I just recognized the power in education and having to be knowledgeable. And that's what I enjoy teaching my students so much about, teaching them about civics and history and standing up for what's right, and just getting them to learn what's out there in the world, that there are many things out there just beyond your small neighborhood and community, and giving them that exposure to the world.
You knew getting in, though, that there were going to be issues like some of the issues we hear now, right?
Yeah, and when the economic crisis was on, I had a RIF notice to be laid off. I was fortunate enough to be able to keep my job just barely, like my year of teaching. At that point, I had already had about 5 years of experience. And we lost a lot of great teachers. And only now are we even able to kind of regroup from that experience, that we lost fantastic colleagues, that just because of when they had started, that wasn't enough time in the district to be able to keep their jobs.
But for this district, mm-hmm. it had been 30 years mm-hmm. since there had been this sort of labor action. That's a long time. And in many cases, you were probably just a little taught at that time. What we're seeing now is unprecedented for many people who weren't born yet. Mm-hmm. And so there's an energy, I think, that I've noticed among people, a lot of the young teachers particularly, that you're trying to make a point. Now, is how much of that is this wave across the country of other teachers in other places feeling the same way, or how much is it unique to the LA Unified School District?
Well, I would argue, I mean, yes, we've seen the Red for Ed movement, and I think there's some momentum there. I also think that there's just a movement around the country in terms of, think of all the marches that have existed in the past couple of years since Trump was elected. I think there's a momentum there as well, a sense of disenfranchisement and a sense of disempowerment among voters who perhaps do not support Trump. So I think there's that kind of momentum as well, of a feeling of wanting to express their voices and our voices. So I think that's there. I think a cynical take on this, I'm just going to put it out there,
sure,
is also that unions have been under threat in some ways. There's been a Supreme Court decision that limited dues for non-members. I think there's a kind of window of opportunity right now to demonstrate that there's a value to being in a union. And I think that's also at play.
Well, one of the things we've seen is other unions joining UTLA, United Teachers of Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And you've seen, you know, various unions wearing T-shirts and so forth from their unions to say, hey, we're behind these guys. So there is that sort of simpatico, that sort of getting together and feeling a sense of, what, sovereign brotherhood, you know, sort of thing. But I think that we've always seen protests.
Sure.
I mean, back when I was in college, I think we were protesting the Revolutionary War. Okay, I'm not that old.
So hell, I think one thing
Vietnam was what they were protesting when I was in college.
An important note,
yeah,
that, you know, we have seen these strikes sometimes and often strengthen unions, right? So management doesn't seem to get that, right? And I don't believe in this idea. I'm a union person myself. I've been in three strikes. Two of them were settled. One, we were on the picket line for a day. It was settled. So I've seen how the effect, how they rupture relationships, how distrust and all this other stuff takes place. But the bottom line is that unions get strengthened many times, and you can see it, and you can see parents are out there supporting them. So it's really incumbent upon the management to figure out a way to work with the unions to move the district forward. Unions aren't going anywhere. They're here. They're part of the thing. And Julie and I were talking, maybe it's time to bring someone in as a third party to say, hey, folks, let's get some calm. Let's figure this out. And I think it's really important for your listeners to look at the fact-finding report. It's short. I think Weinberg did a really good job with that. There's someone from UTLA on that. There's someone from the district. There's not a lot of disagreement in that fact-finding report. So you have to ask yourself, what's going on here? And I think
a report that basically says,
listen, we agree basically on salary. The administration says, listen, we teachers, we get it. We need to reduce class sizes. We need to bring on allied professionals, but we can only do that for a year because we don't know what the future brings. And in fairness to management of And they often at CSUN, they always say, you know, you don't understand our culture. You don't understand what we're dealing with. You don't understand the pressures of Sacramento and the money issues. And I think we really need to begin to look at, where does this money come from? Yes, these are great things. We need to do it. But how do we make this thing happen?
It's so interesting to me that in a public policy setting, we as voters can approve marijuana for recreational purposes. But why can't we approve money to fix our schools? There's something not connecting there,
right,
for
but
me.
We could elect people who would push for those things.
Well, sure,
right?
Of course.
So
yeah.
We're not voting. I mean, we're not, you know.
That's true. Priorities and voting, very important.
And we're not marching on Sacramento. I mean, I think Newsom and others are just, you know, they're sitting back right now. Maybe they're working behind closed doors, but it's not their problem yet. Mm-hmm. And we faced this at the CSU, the Cal State system, too. We kept saying, let's take this fight to Sacramento. We're not going to solve it locally. Let's take it. And we did. And so the CSU now is getting a lot more money, so is the UC system. So you really got to translate this action. I love this action. I was out on the picket line Monday morning in the rain with the teachers. They are, you know, one thing you
I
always
didn't see you there.
I was at Northridge Academy, and they you can feel it, you can sense it, you can smell this fight, you know, and that's what we need. But let's channel it and get on the road to Sacramento and start making people accountable for
so
how they spend money.
I think that's a good point. Channel that energy.
Yeah.
Now, Sacramento, we keep saying Sacramento. A lot of people may not understand that the bulk of the money that comes to any local school district comes from the general fund in Sacramento, which is why we have a Department of Education in the state, which doles out the money. They have something called local control, where they give you the money and you do with it what you feel is appropriate for your particular district. It's the same thing that happens with the lottery money that is supposed to help education. Do either of you know if the lottery money is really helping education?
I think we had this conversation before. I just think of it as being a very small portion of the total funding that you're getting in public schools in California. It's not that much.
It's not that
I
much.
I don't know enough about it.
But we have $500 million Powerballs. You know, we have all these big, amazing lotteries, and some of that money is put. So even if it's a percentage of a large amount of money, it should be a chunk of change, right?
Yeah, but Hal, once again, I think there's a problem here, because you said, you know, we can pass cannabis reform, but the state of cannabis in this state is in bad shape right now as far as just policy and where the money's going. So you can make all sorts of decisions. One thing, I know I came from Texas to California, and there just seems to be – it's not very mindful. We roll something out, and then we sort of clean it up afterwards. And I'm just wondering if we can – maybe Julie can address – if we can become a little more proactive. And, you know, what she said earlier on the television show is really important. Step back and look at these things on a micro level, you know – I'm sorry, on a macro level, that – We're talking about housing in L.A. We're talking about the cost of living. We're talking about a number of things. We're talking about students that are coming to your classes that are dealing with trauma as they've never dealt with before, that teachers are dealing with secondary trauma. And so what do? We took the psychologists out of the classroom. We took the social workers out. We took music. We took all these things that have the power to heal and for people to connect. So you know, we really need to think this through. The demonizing, the hurling, the insults – it goes nowhere. I've been in three of these.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah. I don't think beating people up gets you anywhere at all. I think you get more with sugar.
And
right?
And let's talk about the money that's being lost on a daily basis, too.
Yep.
I mean, we've got to resolve this. Hopefully it'll be resolved by the time this podcast is on and your show is on. But if not, it's, you know, what did the LA Times reported? $15 million was lost in the first day.
So. Well, I think what I heard, it's net $15 million. It was $25 million that was lost in class sizes. Because you get paid per student in the classes. And then it was $10 million that was gained on lost wages because people like the teachers in this room were not getting paid.
No, we are not.
So the net difference is a $15 million
right.
loss. But you do that every day for however long a labor action lasts, and you're killing your budget.
Yeah.
Right?
But
you're killing it.
We do it because even though we are losing our own personal money on a daily basis, we just feel that this is so much more important than that we're willing to make our own personal sacrifices change in the right direction.
I have heard of cases where you have the wife who is out on strike from LAUSD and the husband who is out of work on TSA because of the federal shutdown. we've got a lot going on in this country, and it's confusing a lot of people, you know, because all of a sudden now stuff is happening to your pocketbook, and pocketbook impact is what often changes the political dynamic in this country. So do you think, politics aside of who you like or who you don't like, do you think that what we're seeing on our streets and what we're seeing from the federal shutdown, we're seeing from all these negative sort of things that are happening, negative in the sense that they're not causing for normalcy, will have an impact at the ballot box for a lot of people?
I think so, and I think it's going to have a positive effect, because I think you can just look at the last elections, right? People were fed up, and they marched, and they went to the polls, and that's what we need. We need people to be active and involved, and, you know, to see the teachers, to see the emotion just in this room right now from the teachers, that's good stuff, and to see the parents there. But take that and let's focus it where it needs to be focused. I'm a big supporter of focusing in Sacramento.
And we'll be having a school board election for one of our open seats in March. And it's really important that we have people on our school board who have been educators, who have been involved in education, that
Are
have
you announcing,
been teachers.
For office,
I am not. I'm just promoting that in these smaller elections, the interim ones, and the ones where not as many people are informed and go out to vote, that one of our seats is open for school board, and that we really need to make sure that we have somebody on that school board who's had our experiences and that really know what education looks like and what education needs. Because there's been a lot of involvement from people from the outside who have no educational
and they have no
background.
Education background.
And that's
right.
A huge problem right now, to have a superintendent who has never spent a day working in a school and working with kids, and to have some school board members who have not had that experience working in classrooms either. It's very frustrating that at times the outside seems like they're imposing what they think is right, but have no experience to back that up, and don't take on many people who could help steer that in the right way, who have been recently in the classrooms
so
and working at schools.
I hear the frustration. Mm-hmm. I hear the frustration. But let me just ask about a different part of you. How frustrated are you are as a teacher in a classroom?
I love my students, and they're wonderful, but we just need a lot more of the support services. It used to be a 20-to-1 student ratio, and then with the recession for kindergarten through third grade, it's currently 24-to-1, which is manageable, but the next year when they go into fourth and fifth grade, that number increases to 34, and then in middle school, it increases to the mid-40s. And sometimes even though the cap might be 24, you still might be having 25, 26. When the new student arrives, they're not turned away. And so the numbers do just keep increasing with age to times when it's in the mid-40s.
Well, in college, you may end up in auditoriums with a couple hundred people in the class. But at that point, we get that. We understand what that's like. We're talking about education in the formative years. So in the earliest of years, you need fewer kids in the classroom so that you can address individual issues where one student might not be getting the math, one student might not be understanding the spelling or the grammar or whatever it might be. Is that right?
Yeah, can I just round out the conversation a bit more too, again, just to bring balance of perspective, that again, it's not just about the size of the class, it's about who's in that class. And so I would also argue that there may be some opportunity to be discussing who was actually getting placed in these classrooms, both within a school and across schools. And we have evidence that lower income kids and higher needs kids often disproportionately have teachers who are lower in experience level and perhaps in their performance. So I think what we should think about, sometimes there are rules that get in the way of some of these decisions that administrators want to make. And I would put that in our conversation about how we're going to approve schools.
Well, that sounds like a big undertaking, though, if you're going to try to figure out how to match kids with classrooms.
I think that as school leaders might want to have a bit more flexibility around where they place the teachers that they think are perhaps better suited to what are the needs they have in their school.
Right. Well, you have for special ed, you have Marlton School in the LA Unified School District, a good example of a school designed specifically for special needs. And special teachers go to those schools, right?
They do, but all schools are reporting that they are having a shortage of qualified, credentialed special education teachers. And, you know, those individuals, those students, must be the most vulnerable. So it's really important that we get some great teachers. But I want to go back to your point about...
Anna Marie's point about... Anna Marie, and I keep changing her name.
About, you know, having a leader that reflects your educational background. And I certainly agree that that's important. But I think it was the way that it was done. Had Buettner come in and said, listen, and they've brought in...
Buettner, by the way, is the superintendent of the L.A. Unified School District.
They've brought in others. I think there was an admiral at one time, right? It didn't work. But I think a little more transparency. Look, I personally, I don't know Austin Buettner. I know nothing about him other than that he came from... investment banking background. I can't hold that against him. And obviously the LA Times and so forth. But for me, if he might have been a little more transparent, I'm intrigued by this portfolio idea. I'm not for it or against it.
Can you explain what that is?
So the portfolio idea is that you look at a school district and you have a school board that has control over all the schools, right? So the charter schools and they take a more an approach where they're more oversight and accountability, but allow a lot more autonomy to take place. So we've seen that in New York. I think we've seen that in Denver and other. And you know what?
How well did it work?
So, but the what I recently read, it's fairly new. But there has been some improvement, right? So, and I think the idea of giving schools teachers, right, who are on the frontline administrators, autonomy and control and flexibility, is really key. So I don't want to throw things out. We get into the charters, you know, siphoning off. I mean, Diane Ravitch has been talking about that for a while. There are some great charters. Chime Charter, which is a CSUN affiliated school. Rossier has some affiliated schools. Unbelievable, incredible. So what is working? What we need to do is what is working, what's not working, and figure out ways to manage it better. Because, I sort of envision one day a mixture of, it's going to be this way, a public held schools and charter schools, but there needs to be, proper oversight and management of that.
I'd like to get back to the students because really that's what the focus is here.
Sure.
And I have to disagree with the statement that was made about class size and about quality teachers, because I have worked at about 10 different schools, independent, charter, affiliated, unaffiliated, private, public, you know, and there are quality teachers in every school I've ever worked at, and there are teachers that definitely need some extra support, guidance, and training. However, you take a quality teacher and give her 30 six-year-olds, and then you give a quality teacher 20 and give her a TA, part-time or full-time, and vastly different things will happen in the classroom. I've experienced it myself, I've seen it, and it is absolutely what we need to focus on as a city, as a state, as a nation. Our priorities need to be health and education, absolutely, fiercely.
And I don't think anyone around this table.
I'm
and
not
myself,
disagreeing
would
with that.
I would say you're right.
Us that we shouldn't.
Yeah, and I think you're right. You want a combination of class size and competence, right? You don't want, because that's a problem. I think we can all agree on that. And I think we all agree that teachers have been devalued over the years. You can look at just popular media and so forth. And we have not acknowledged that today's student is very different. I know, when I was teaching, they say, oh, the old timers say, and we say to the old timers, you don't know anything because we have kids that are different. But truly now you're seeing intense needs of students. And where is the social emotional support for teachers and the allied professions that help with that? So, and that is costly. That costs money.
As far as the teachers go, there's a research study, which I'm sure some of you are aware of, that analyzed decisions made per minute. Mm. And next to an airline pilot, elementary school teachers make more decisions per minute than any other profession. And that in and of itself should help the public, you listeners out there, you voters, understand how important it is that we fund our schools and value students and give support TAs who are amazing so that we can meet kids' needs, like you were just saying, complex.
My only point was that we need to think more broadly and holistically about how we support teachers, and that class size isn't the only component. And that we did class size reduction in this state years ago, and there's been studies done, and it, on the average, didn't show improvements for student outcomes, because in many places they ended up having to hire emergency credentialed teachers. So we have to kind of think broadly about then let's just make sure that we have the teachers in the classes. And then let's go beyond that too. Let's talk about preparation. Let's talk about how we're recruiting them. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about career ladders so that we don't incentivize the two of you who are clearly good teachers to leave the classroom in order to get more money or in order to do other kinds of things. Let's talk about career ladders. Let's talk about how we keep people from turning over in our schools, right? There's a whole host of policies we could be talking about in addition to class size.
Yeah, you should be teaching and focusing on kids, not teaching and driving Uber. And the other, you know, so we really need to think about that. I haven't come across people say. I did have one Facebook comment. Someone said, "You know, I work 60 hours a week, and teachers don't work that much, and da da da." But I don't think that's the norm.
We're sending nowadays with technology, we're sending more messages to parents than ever before. Sure. Like through my Class Dojo app, I'm usually responding to messages frequently and getting in contact with parents. And so that's why when class size is high, it's hard to communicate with all those parents as well. We're trying to like help educate the parents as well as the kids so that how they can better help their kid home and have that communication. I definitely agree, Julie, with what you said about providing supports for teachers. Our turnover rate is so high right now, and especially in our hard to staff schools, and we just kind of keep cycling through and never giving any extra supports to them. My fear with the portfolio model is that it's just going to be like looking and analyzing and deciding which schools aren't working and not really continuing to actually help the problem of like looking at those schools. Well, yeah, they are hard to staff, but they are getting high turnover. So a lot of those students aren't receiving, not that the teachers aren't qualified, they're just not experienced. I'm a much better teacher now than I was in year one and year two and year three. But many of those kids are never getting a teacher that ever reached year four, five, and six, where they really felt comfortable in what they were doing. You go from your credential program to sink or swim, and nobody's really there to like give you pointers and help you. You just kind of get that from whatever other teacher happens to be at your school, but there's no true like mentorship, and especially in schools that have a lot more struggles. Ours is a Title I school, but I know that there are other schools in the district that are even more impoverished than we are and have even more issues than ours does.
But I think, you know, if you step back and look at it and say, well, there are other factors as well, housing, cost of living. So in some countries, teachers are subsidized. They receive a subsidy for housing. You know, and so we need to start looking at things. I know it gets expensive, but it's an issue of priorities and finding out where we can cut here and maybe do things differently. You know, I think one of the things that a strike does, it freezes everybody in a position and you can't look at outside the box. You know, what can we do? But I really do have some hope because I've seen the emotions out there, and I think people are fed up and want some change. Maybe we can get to some of those out-of-the-box ways of thinking. And that takes labor and management working together. You know, and I'll just give you a quick example, and that's at Cal State Northridge. We have a collaborative labor and management system where we try to move the university forward, and we are very vocal in getting our needs met, but we also understand that it's about give and take, and it's about the students, and we need to be able to move forward, because when we're locked in, you know, in this gridlock, there's no forward movement. In fact, we were talking about, I'd love to see, and we will see, the economic impact of this. What about all those kids that walk home and at the local mom and pop grocery store, at the candy store, are not spending their money? I mean, there's a lot of things that are impacting the city of LA right now. Ridership on buses is most probably down, et cetera. So these things have, you know, they have tentacles. It's just not...
It's unintended consequences also.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Things happen that you maybe didn't think about happening, and that's a big concern. One of the things, when you were on the picket line on that first day of the strike, Did you notice how you could hear the anger in people's voices? I noticed, you know, I'm a trained observer, right? You could hear sort of people finally letting go, letting it out. And maybe because it was a mass thinking, I'm not sure you necessarily at your school.
There's frustration out there, you know? There's passion and love for children and learning and our society as a whole. And I've been very concerned about it throughout my career, our priorities as a society. And I think that, like you said, it's an opportunity. It's a shift. There's a shift going on. I mean, out of chaos, a rising star is born. So we do need to look back and we do need to look
in depth. That's exactly the point. Out of chaos, a rising star is born. We rise from the ashes, whatever phrase you want to use, whatever one you like the best. But Julie's point, I think, is really an important point, and that's the fact this is an opportunity to fix something, not necessarily that it's broken, oh me, oh my. It's how do we make it better, right? How do we get to where we need to get? You know, that's the fundamental question. So let me just sort of do it this way. Let's go around the table and see if you can answer that question. If you can't, that's fine. How do we get to where we need to get? Let's start with the teachers. We'll end up with Julie.
Well, again, I think voting is extremely important, right? Citizens need to get out there. I think social media helps invigorate and energize the youth. I think that we need to make sure that at the state level and the federal level, we are really prioritizing what is important for American society. I just firmly believe that education is just so important. So we need to possibly shift things around in our budget. We need to make sure that we are taxing people who are very, very, very comfortable, because this is a democracy and we need to make sure that the society in general we're taking care of one another. So we can no longer just think me, me, me. This isn't the 80s, you know? The side ponytail is gone. So we need to focus on how we are going to be proud of ourselves as Americans and focus on the future by supporting children.
Anne-Marie?
Yes, our school board officials are elected officials, and so...
I keep thinking you're going to make an announcement.
I am. But it's so important, and they're the ones who then choose their superintendent, and so there's a lot that rides on that, and it's a very important job because that's determining a lot of things in what falls down on our schools. When I think about our school, I do think that... the communication and level of teaching definitely increases with smaller classes. I think that having counselors at our school sites every day to be able to be teaching those social emotional lessons and not just reacting when kids have a problem, but also really preventing those bullying problems and things like that from coming up. School shootings are a topic that's across the country, and while we don't have control over gun control, we have control to really help educate kids how to regulate and deal with their emotions and stressors. That's like the part that we can do at schools to help prevent those problems that people are having that they don't know how to handle when they get to older ages. Having nurses that can communicate well with families about nutrition and exercise as well, to have healthy lifestyles at home, not just that, you know, they take the kids height and weight each year, or that, you know, the one day of the week that they're there, they can handle kids who happen to get sick on that one day a week, but that they're there for our students who have epilepsy and have seizures while at school, our students who have diabetes and have to take shots every day, that they're there to help those things, but that it can build further to helping educate the families to have more healthy lifestyles. I mean, the kids have to have good physical health, good mental and emotional and social health before they can even really sit down and learn content and material.
Well, we'll finish up with Ivor and Julie, but I have to say, based on what you're saying, having seen a few of the kids during this labor dispute, I kind of wonder to what extent will they be impacted and might need some counseling. I mean, am I over the top on that thought?
No, it's a weird experience for them, and they don't. Yeah, I talked about it with my students before
in
we
advance
went out.
Of the action,
because I have third grade, and one of our units earlier this year had a lot of information about Cesar Chavez and boycotts and strikes and what that meant. So they had some of that vocabulary already, but I talked about with them the reasons why we were doing this. But they are in a weird position, the ones that do come to school, because, you know, they're walking past and then they see me and they give this little wave and smile. But I'm sure it is confusing that, you know, we had this conversation. They kind of know that it's what needs to happen. But at the same time, they're still like, why isn't my teacher here?
And it seems in a way like it could be a little traumatic. It does seem that way. Everybody agree with that?
Yeah.
Yeah, it does sort of seem that way. And I sort of wonder, you know, how much thought is going into, if this is still continuing at the time you're listening to this, I wonder how much thought is going into the well-being of the children. I know that you hear the district saying they're the first and foremost. We need our good teachers back. Everybody's painting the teacher as a really good person. I haven't heard anybody demonizing teachers. But I am wondering about the mental health of the kids after hearing a few of them sounding pretty dejected who were in the classrooms, and then hearing others who were on the picket line feeling energized, feeling they were learning more by watching their teachers stand up for their rights than they were sitting in an auditorium learning about some kind of a universal class assignment for the day.
Well, I think when it comes to social-emotional learning and just a basic psychology of kids is when they see that adults are fighting, they see conflict, it's not a comforting thing for them. And then also school is a safe place for many. But I was going to say, I don't have any answers on this one. I think it's a very complicated, nuanced thing. But I think the administration, Sacramento, superintendent should really be aware of the passion and the anger that I see. I think that, you know, dissent is healthy in a democracy, and it's nice to see parents and teachers being very passionate about this, because this is what brings about change. I think we need to take that passion, that anger, and move it to Sacramento and begin our demand that Sacramento really looks at these issues. And I just don't want to take anything off the table. I think it's important we look at everything, and that we get back to a dialogue where we can talk about compelling arguments and data and research and do the best for kids. What I do know, and I do have an answer about, is that impasse and gridlock, we're going nowhere. And the divide is going to get bigger, and we're going to spend a lot of time repairing this ruptured relationship.
Before, I think I need to take my side ponytail out before I talk. I didn't realize it went out of fashion. I would agree with what you've all said. I think we need to be focusing on some of the fixes that have to happen at a higher level than in our city. I think those include fixing some of the funding issues in Sacramento. I think we need to address pensions. I think we need to address special education funding. I think we need to find creative ways to work around Proposition 13. I think you're speaking to some of your comments were about broader policy and the tax policy and how we can raise more funding for education. I think we need to look at housing policy and the cost of living, particularly in cities like Los Angeles. And we should think about affordability and all sorts of issues that are impacting, you know, our kids in terms of poverty and lack of health care and all of those other things as well. And so I would just concur with my table mates here.
So the bottom line is what? The bottom line is?
We all value teachers. I mean, I think the other point I would like to make is just this idea around the polarization of some of these issues. You know, I don't think we all can agree that teachers matter. And so I think if we could find ways, right? So the charter issue comes in and then it polarizes people. And I think we need to move away from that. I think we need to recognize that we agree. I mean, we agree on some basics, and we need to work on a more kind of comprehensive approach and channel it to where the decisions could get made and channel this energy that we're seeing in Los Angeles for greater civic action.
But, you know, I was going to wrap it up here, but I can't, because we haven't really talked about the charter issue, but you kind of raised the specter of it. So let me at least have you say, what is the concern about charter schools? And is that an accurate perception or a misconception?
I mean, earlier we were talking and some comment was made that they're for-profits. I think there's some misconceptions. Very few charters are for-profits. However, charter schools have boards. There's some concern about who are the interests and individuals serving on those boards. And so that's one concern. I think there are concerns around the unregulated growth, which is a state policy issue because we allow 100 new charters a year in California. So some people who want to put a cap, that's a state issue. I think there are concerns about special education and some cream skimming that goes on, right? So I think there are these concerns around, so special ed, for example, you know, how can a school serve particular kinds of students? And so sometimes students might be discouraged from going to certain schools. These are concerns that have been laid. However, if you look at, there are lots of charter schools that serve special education students. I think there's been a little bit of misconception around what are charter schools in terms of are they serving white middle-class families?
And what are they? How do you describe them?
Okay, so they are publicly funded schools that have greater autonomy, greater flexibility, and they don't have to be unionized. Okay, so, but some are. But most of them are independent in the ability to hire and fire and set salaries, pick curriculum, assessments, set their schedules, right? So they have a greater sense of flexibility in exchange for an autonomy, which is that they have a five-year plan, they set their goals, and then their authorizer, which can be a school board, a county, or the state, is supposed to be kind of managing and overseeing that they're meeting their goals and that every 5 years that they would be then sort of renewed if they're meeting their goals. That's in theory. Another piece of it was this idea that they would have this greater flexibility, would allow for some innovations to occur, sort of labs that they could then share back. That part of it has not been happening on a wide scale. And I think there are some concerns around the accountability piece of this. I think in places like LAUSD, there's a full charter office that has the ability. Statewide, not every district has the ability to sort of oversee their schools. So there's concerns around that.
So I'm gonna ask you a question. And if you know the answer to it, I'm also going to ask you what the lottery numbers are for tonight.
I don't like these questions. No.
What do you see schools in the future looking like?
Wow. Well, I think technology is a piece of it too, right? I think we're going to see more technology in our schools and potentially these sort of blended models of virtual and non-virtual kinds of ways. I don't think charter schools are going away. I don't have a problem with thinking through then what do we do about that situation, right? So issues around regulating more of the growth. We have schools that are under-enrolled, that are not performing, right? We need to think about that at a system level. I think there are some state issues too, though. If we want LA to stop the growth of charters, it's actually kind of a problem with our state policy because if you apply for a charter and the LA school board denies it, you can go to the county or to the state. So it doesn't actually allow you this sort of ability to regulate. So I think we need to think through some of these issues around their enrollment practices. Like not every family in LA, the idea of charters was that as a middle or upper income family, you have choice because you could move to a better neighborhood and go to a better school or go to a private school. And the idea of charters initially by some community activists who were very supportive of this was that this gives lower income families choice that they could actually send their kids, right? But in LA, with the lack of transportation, with the limits we have on information, not everyone actually does know how to get in. And so it does require a bit of parental savvy to understand. And I would level the same things on magnet schools. Magnet schools have some autonomy. They are part of the district in terms of union, but it takes a special kind of parent to know how to get through that point system. Mm-hmm. So we've got some bigger issues. I don't think I answered your question.
I think you kind of were starting to get there. But I think maybe where you were starting to go was that technology may play a role. That yeah. I kind of wonder if maybe some people will opt for homeschooling instead of going to the school if they feel their child might be able to get
some
kind of
better attention. Well, that could be an unintended consequence of a strike, right? But I want to piggyback on Julie's thing. And I'm going to criticize schools of education, and I'm part of that. For many years, and we continue to do it, we have trained teachers to be purveyors of technical knowledge. That's it. You're a great math specialist or you're a great special education, but we've left out an equation, and that's the social-emotional aspect of the child and the social-emotional aspect of the teacher. The teachers nowadays face a tremendous amount of stress, and we don't provide any supports for them. We don't address that in the classroom, and we need to start doing that. And so we have also created... colleges of education also have a role to play in this.
All right. Well, I mean, that's you've gotten into some pretty heady stuff here. So I think it's interesting. Look, if we knew the future, we'd be able to win the lottery. So I know that, you know, we're raising questions here that we can't necessarily answer. But the bottom line is that if nothing else, do situations like labor disputes cause us to talk more publicly about public policy? I think the answer is yes. I think we all tend to think a little more about what's going on in our communities because of situations like this. Because whenever else do we talk about how good education is, unless we hear that people are upset about the way it's been? Is that right?
That's true. Los Angeles Times has been notorious for bad-mouthing teachers and publishing articles to destroy teachers' morale and skew statistics on testing. So I've seen a lot of that go on, and it saddens me. But that's one positive aspect of social media, is that we now have a voice, and people can make pages, community pages, parent pages, and share video and interview one another and keep, you know, the real facts.
But I also say, Hal, you'll be having this conversation with the cannabis reform folks, right? Because in 2 years, because it's going to be a mess. And that's what we need to get. Take that energy, take it to Sacramento. But Sacramento has sort of had this idea of putting things together sort of on the fly, not thinking through them. And so we really need to hold folks accountable there to really look at all the issues.
Because I wonder, though, how much of an issue it is that we have changing politicians all the time, that we're electing new people, and so we lose a sense of consistency.
Right, and then that incentivizes people to do these sort of quick fix kind of short-term solutions to what are actually much broader and much more nuanced and bigger than that. So I agree. I actually am a little concerned about that. I like the idea of this galvanizing conversation. I think we need to be careful of the sort of black and white, quick fix kind of thing. I mean, I've had more calls from the media this week than my entire career, which is great. But
and I know that you gave us the exclusive.
Exactly, Hal. No, but I mean, really. But it's, you know, we have to be careful. These issues are so politically charged. This issue around the charter school issue is, you know, I've gotten emails when I tried to set, I would call attention to the race for the state superintendent of instruction, the Thurman Tuck race. That was the most expensive election we've ever had in the state for an office that is not a lot of formal authority, supposed to be a kind of nonpartisan position. $60 million. So I did an interview with the New York Times about that race, and I tried to explain to people, look at who's funding these folks and decide based on that. I was trying to be very kind of open to say, look, you know, the union was supporting one and these philanthropists were supporting another. I got anonymous emails sent to me with statements like, you are lying, we know it, and you will get your you know, you'll get paid back.
Right.
Exactly.
That's part of the problem.
On both sides. So I think, like, let's de-escalate the kind of craziness, right?
I mean, I think, you know, speaking to what's going to happen now going forward, and again, by the time this podcast airs, you know, things could be resolved. I hope they are. But I was around when class size reduction went from 34 kids in second grade and then the next year, 20 kids. And I am concerned about enough trained teachers being able to fill those positions. Because if we keep discouraging teachers from entering that profession and the district or the state doesn't plan in advance, what's going to happen next year if we do get this? So those are things that we have to look at, the big picture, and plan in advance, again, so that we can service our students.
Wow. There's a lot to talk about here, and I think that, you know, credit to all of you for, you know, jumping in here with your thoughts and sort of taking on some things that are in many cases very hard to understand. But I think as lay people who are listening to news stories about what's happening with the strike, and we see people with picket signs and we hear what they say and we hear it repeatedly because that's sort of the talking points of any particular incident, that, you know, maybe we all as a community of people need to sort of think more about how do we deal with that that's important for our kids. And it's amazing how often I find myself invoking Rodney King and saying, can't we all get along? But, you know, there is this partisan divide in this country, and some of that bleeds into every other institution we have and every conversation we deal with, whether it's about how it works in education or how it works in news. And I think, yeah, I'm not going there. But
that's the next hour.
Let me tell you something. This is not fake, what you're listening to here. There's nothing fake about this news. But the bottom line is it's a great conversation. And, I'm just going to go ahead and wrap it up here. And I'm going to thank all of you for being with us. And I'm going to tell everybody who's listening that if you haven't, please subscribe to our podcast. I think, you know, we oftentimes get into some really good conversations. This is one of them. And, you can go to iTunes, Google Play, wherever you get your podcast. And give us 5 stars. And give us 6 or 7 if you want to, even though they only have room for 5. And thanks for joining us. And we'll see you next time.